on 76. We'd like to hear explanations around the dash fours and dash fives. And we could, let's start with the, I believe the dash five is similar to the dash one we had the other day. Is that right, Mr. Fuller? Could we start with the dash five?
Madam Co-Chair.
Actually, Representative Berger wanted to start us off.
Yes. Yes, members of the committee, if you recall the discussion, Mr. Fuller suggested that the a district attorney from these counties and a sheriff, who are elected officials in these counties, be included on this board. There are some who, with this double majority thing, have problems with just adding to this particular group. I suggested that at least one of the two should be on this board, and I think in discussions with district attorneys and sheriffs, it was agreed that sheriffs would be the ones. They are elected officials. I am a proponent, really, of having inclusion of public safety, and I'm happy with the elected sheriffs as part of this board. Whether they're voting or not is another discussion, but remember that if this is affected, if this whole thing comes together, it's because of a crisis, a serious crisis. And certainly elected public safety people need to be at the table, in my opinion. So that is why I have come forward with the dash fives. I'm not, I want to work with the committee, but I really do think that public safety needs to be a big part of a conversation if this, if we have to enact these boards. Oh, I'm sorry. Questions or comments? I see, it appears I have the gavel, so. Mr. Fuller, you wanna double down, and then we'll ask you to explain yours.
She's doing a great job.
Representative from her.
Co-Vice Chair, members of the committee, Darrell Fuller on behalf of the Oregon State Sheriff's Association. I did bring the dash one amendments that added the district attorney and the sheriff to the county side of this, if you will, bicameral crisis committee, four members appointed by the governor, and then the county board of commissioners were the other side, and both sides have to agree on a plan that gets the county out of its crisis. We asked to add the sheriff and the district attorney as voting members on the county side, because in the original statute, we were consulted because it was a public safety crisis. And as you moved from a public safety crisis to a fiscal crisis that deals with all state services that are provided by a county instead of just the public safety issues, we wanted to make sure that the public safety issues received the attention that they needed. And the concern that the counties had is if you have a three-member county commission and you add two more members, this would allow the public, the DA and the sheriff, to work with a single member of the county commission and create a working majority that would be a minority of the elected board of commissioners. And I understood that concern and offered to compromise to have only just the sheriffs added instead of the sheriffs and the DA, because that would not dilute the influence of the board of commissioners in a way that a minority of the board of commissioners could adopt a plan. The actual language of the dash five amendments that are before you don't quite get us where we thought we were going to get in terms of the language. There's a technical problem with the language, because the language of the bill requires a majority of the board of commissioners to approve a plan. If you add the sheriff as a voting member, but then only allow the board of commissioners to vote on the plans, you're a voting member, but then you're not. So I believe the language needs to be tweaked a little bit to say that the elected officials from the county, instead of the governing board of the county, that the elected officials of the county in subsection B and subsection C would constitute the vote on the county side of the equation. And so I think we're really close there. The dash four amendments, which the governor's office will discuss, just for the record, we're in favor of the dash four amendments. They clarify an issue that Representative Barnhart brought up in terms of how the majority issue comes about. In the meantime, the counties have asked for an amendment that's not here yet, and their amendment would add the sheriff as a voting member on public safety issues only, which makes up most of what the county government does, but wouldn't give us a vote on issues about what they do at the assessor's office or the treasurer's office or things of that nature. And we're not opposed to those amendments if they get here, and we can review those as well. So that's what I know at this point.
Thank you, Mr. Fuller.
Madam Chair, so
yes,
Daryl, that's going to be the dash six then, if they ever get here?
I would expect so.
Okay.
Yes.
Representative.
Is it contemplated that the correction in the dash fives that you mentioned that I was not aware of would also be part of what is?
We don't know if that, Madam Co-Chair, Representative Berger, we don't know if that message got to Legislative Council in order to make that technical change in terms of where they're at in that process. When we see the dash sixes, we'll know. And if not, hopefully that change will be fairly quick in terms of the turnaround process, since it's a technical issue and not a substantive.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Fuller. Is there someone here from the county to speak to that?
I think they're down at LC.
We'll go to the governor's office.
Madam Chair. For the record, Sarah Gates with the Department of Administrative Services here on behalf of the Governor's Office, and I'm here to speak to you about the Dash 4 amendments. The Dash 4 amendments were drafted to clarify the double majority voting because there was some not clear on how that would work and some concern about how that would work. What the Dash 4 amendments do is they clearly delineate between the vote of the governor's appointees as being one majority and the vote of the county governing board, as it's still written, as the second majority. In the prior original version of the bill, it had the entire boards being one majority and then the county commission or the county governing board being the second majority, and that was not That was a bit confusing, so we wanted to really clarify that and put that into an amendment. It also adds one more person on the governor's appointees to make an odd number so that we would not have an even number, potentially tie vote issue.
Thank you. Representative Barnhart.
Madam Chair, I want to move on to a different topic, so maybe we should finish this one first.
Okay, we'll do that. Thank you, Representative. Let's hear from the counties as well. Since we're talking about what is essentially the board makeup conversation at the moment.
Madam Chair, co-chairs, members of the committee, Mike MacArthur, Association of Oregon Counties. We've been in serial discussions about this during the day, and Mr. Fuller and I concur that the sheriff should be a voting member representing the public safety community on this board when matters of public safety are being discussed. When we're talking about elections, assessment, taxation, it's not necessary. So we have agreed in principle on that, which is a matter of getting language, which we hope will be in the dash sixes for your consideration.
Thank you. I guess I have a question about that. Wouldn't want the sheriff voting on anything else? This idea of just voting only when it's a public safety issue is, why is that? I mean, there are other things within the county government that do actually affect public safety, so I guess I'm just trying to figure out how you would define that.
Well, Madam Chair, members of the committee, the commissioners are elected as broad public policymakers across all the departments, across all the services. The sheriff's mission, the sheriff's elected to work in the public safety area. That's their expertise. So it's felt that when you get to other topics, the sheriff is only focused primarily on public safety. So why involve them in these other discussions?
I guess I would argue they should care about the other topics as well and probably have some expertise. I think we're, you know, underselling their influence and importance. Representative Esquivel, on this topic?
Very brief. The sheriff is also a countywide elected official as well as the commissioner.
Madam Chair, Representative Esquivel, indeed.
So, colleagues, any other questions about the dash 4, dash 5? This is dealing with the double majority issue. Obviously, if we change the number that we see in the dash 4 and not wanting to have an even number, we might have to have a conversation. I think we have to figure out how to put these all together and get it right. Other questions about this topic before we move on to other aspects of the bill? Representative Freeman?
I'm sorry, it's not on this topic.
Okay. Then
it's on this bill.
Then we'll move on to other parts of the bill. And I don't think you need to stay there. So you're good. Representative Freeman.
Thank you. And I appreciate this.
I'm sorry.
Hold up.
He comes before F. Representative Barnhart.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm, I've been trying to understand what this does, what this bill does, and what it appears to do is raise the public awareness of the fiscal problems the county's having. The governor gets involved. He appoints people to this board. We're talking about what that means. The board has the authority under this bill to actually reallocate county funds, cut services, lay off employees, reduce expenditures, sell or lease real or personal property, issue bonds for the county, but renegotiate payment terms of legal and moral indebtedness, refer measures to the voters of the county, request emergency elections, and authorize the state to take over services. And anyway, that looks like to be the list. What is appears to be either missing or at least maybe referred to only tangentially has to do with raising revenue in the county. Now, maybe issuing bonds implies that they have the right to somehow or another raise the money in the county to pay the bonds, although it doesn't say that. I assume that requesting an emergency election or referring measures to the voters might mean that it can ask the voters to raise taxes to help pay for the county's obligations. But there's nothing explicit in here about anything other than cutting budgets or laying off people. And I'm wondering if that's intentional or an oversight or it doesn't seem balanced to me. Two ways to deal with a budget that's short. One is to cut expenses and the other is to raise some revenue.
Thank you, Representative. And I'm not sure we have anyone. This bill was a concept coming out of the county payment task force, I believe. So I don't know if anyone's listening who's helped with the drafting could maybe come down and speak to the representative's comments. So maybe we'll just hold that.
And if I could add just one more comment. I think the bill is an improvement over the existing law because it changes the current law says that the board can do all of these things or may recommend that the governing body of the county do all of these things. But the words recommend that the governing body of the county is taken out. So the board has, the way I read it, the board has the authority to do all of these things that I read in the middle of page 2. That's definitely an improvement. But I still think the list is a little bit short.
Thank you, Representative. Representative Freeman.
Thank you, Chair Kotek. And once again, Representative Barnhart and I are just exactly in the same spot. It's hard to imagine.
We should be in rules more often.
So as we talk about raising revenue, it's a little troubling to me that we're talking about this bill, which is sort of the worst-case scenario for counties, sort of the worst-case scenario for what is, in many cases, very proud counties that have done very well over a long period of time managing timber resources. And we're talking about this bill and working this bill instead of a bill that we heard just a few minutes ago that would solve this problem. So I just think it's sort of a sad state of affairs that we're focusing in on the negative of what happens when a county is unsuccessful in continuing on and not talking about SJM 201A, which talks about how we get some resources to counties. Just one of those interesting things that's going on today. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative. And I would concur that this is definitely an option that I think most counties would not have to want to go to. And I think that speaks to the additional authority that is in here. One of the questions I had, and again, I'm speaking to the ether, whoever worked on this, in Section 3, which is on page 4, it talks about the fiscally distressed counties fund. The way I read this, and I just need some clarification, when I read this read to me that both the county and the state will contribute evenly to helping establishing and administering the fiscal assistance board. So whether that was, you know, money for a meeting or money for a study or I don't know. But this, I think, is not talking about, you know, a split fiscal responsibility to fill in the gap that the counties are suffering. I just want to clear this fund is about the board itself only. Because it makes reference to private dollars, which makes me nervous. I don't know who they think private dollars would be contributing to these counties to run these boards. So I'm a little I don't know if someone could clarify that for me. So again, a question into the ether. Representative Holby.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Along that same line, one of the things, and maybe something the representative from the governor's office can answer the question is, and maybe it's somewhere else in statute, I keep thinking about what are the state-required services at the minimally adequate level of state-required services. Is this just a judgment call made by the governor's office of what that definition is to declare the county fiscally distressed? I mean, is there a criteria established to, you know, make that call? Or is it just, I guess, it looks like you're going to go broke, so let's call you fiscally distressed. I'm just wondering where that line is. Is it really defined?
Thank you for that question. And I think Representative Barnhart has a couple of bills in revenue, as does Representative Berger.
Well, to comment on that question, there was an LC opinion that was furnished to the Joint Committee on County Funds that we got, I think, yesterday morning. If today's Thursday,
it is
okay.
Still.
That went on for pages and pages on what the various things are the county's required by state law to do. They primarily relate to law enforcement issues of a variety of sorts, and to the assessment and taxation function of the assessor's office. And of course, the other bills that this committee introduced, and that committee asked for, went to the revenue committee. We passed them out, sent them over to revenue. One of those had to deal with the whole issue of how we go about collecting the local property taxes and how the state would help fund that in an emergency situation through the CAFA fund. So I'm not sure that there's anywhere where it's accumulated in statute what the county's responsibilities are. There are some documents that list the various locations in statute where that stuff is located, and it can be found. I'm sorry I don't have it with me. I can't give it to you today. But LC could certainly give it to us.
Madam Chair, this will make me seem really flighty, but I thought we got a memo from Chamoff in this committee the other day that listed all the required duties. Is this the first time we've heard this bill? It's not, is it? We've heard it before.
Well, maybe it was in this committee.
It was this committee.
I may be misremembering it.
But I guess my question really was, if I may.
Yes, Representative
Holden. So you have that list. Who establishes what is minimally adequate? You know, what is that level? I understand there's a list of required services.
Yeah. Madam Chair.
Yes, Representative
Byer. I agree now with Representative Byer. I obviously misremembered which committee it was in. It's a letter dated April 1st, 2009, addressed to Representative Arnie Roblin and signed by Dexter Johnson. And it does go, and we did, it's in my bill folder, so it must have been in this committee.
Shame on it.
And it goes on for several pages.
Was that when we had the first hearing the other day?
I'm assuming. It's in the still folder.
Gold stars for a fire.
Except for I got the wrong LC attorney.
Well, I think the questions I'm hearing are about what is minimal, what is state required.
Yeah.
And then questions about the makeup of the board, questions about the funds. I think we should move on unless the gentleman from the county AOC wanted to make any clarification on any of the questions. I don't want to put you on the spot, but so you can say no. It's okay. Or all three of you. That's great.
Madam Chair, co-chairs, member of the committee, Mike MacArthur, Association of Counties. There are a number of questions that have arisen here. As I talked about in revenue and county payments task force, the county payments task force and federal force that was done in 2009 envisioned a process of four steps going from county saying, oh, we've got a problem, to insolvency or dissolution. And so what we've been trying to do over the last couple of sessions is establish what those second intermediate steps are. And this is really taking us kind of from step two to step two and a half maybe, and trying to give this board some authority to really do something. And so, you know, we're wrestling with the questions of how to structure the board, and then what authorities the board might have under, you know, so you're limited, of course, by constitutional issues, by other statutory issues. So we're trying to thread the needle here. But this is something we really do need, and we'd like to get it in, at least get started with it. I'm sure it's going to get polished, refined over the interim. The Representative Hulvey's question about what are the mandated services, we envision the Criminal Justice Commission defining what minimal public safety services are. Department of Revenue defines what is required through the CAFA process for assessment and taxation. Secretary of State defines what's required for elections, and so on. So there are ways to do that, but it gets very gray, you know, in terms of just how far do you have to go, what levels. For instance, you're required to have a juvenile services officer. Is that full-time, part-time? Who knows? So we get into a very gray area there. But I hope the committee would continue to work with us on this as we resolve these issues and try and get this thing to Ways and Means and further perfect it and put it in place so that we can, Alex can tell you, Lane County is quickly heading to that place too. Perhaps you'd like to hear why it's necessary.
Well, if I could just jump in, I would put a nudge in for also looking at required services as they relate to public health, because I do think those are mandated services. I think everyone takes this very seriously, and so I don't want to be flip. I'm a little concerned that we get this right and that we make sure we get all the changes we can make before we move it on to Ways and Means. I don't suspect the subcommittees have a lot of time to be having this conversation, knowing how they work in Ways and Means. So we're trying to schedule another Rules Committee meeting tomorrow. So we want as much out on the table right now to see if we can get this right by tomorrow so we can get it to Ways and Means, and then we have that fast track onto the floors. I think we understand the need of it, so if there's not something specific to the bill, I would prefer to move on if that's all right.
Thank you, Madam Chair. We appreciate you working with us on it.
Yes, I appreciate your testimony. So, colleagues, we're looking to try to have a meeting tomorrow morning. We're trying to work with your schedules to make that happen so we can get back to some things we're not going to get through all today. But this is a bill that we need to, you know, dig in deep and make sure we're getting it right before we send it to Ways and Means, or at least trying to, you know, put some additional sideboards on it. So with that, I will close the work session on House Bill 4176.
That's next on the list. If it's
so, colleagues, we're going to stand at ease 10 minutes. We're going to reconvene at 4:30. The committee is going to stand at ease until 4:30. Thank you. On rules, we are reconvening. So I would like to say that we are going to hold over House Bill 4176 to tomorrow. We are hoping to have a morning Rules Committee meeting. So House Bill 4176 is going to be held over till tomorrow. I'd like to open a work session on Senate Bill 1566. The website related to seismic risk categories of public schools. We've had the discussion. Mr. Co-Chair?
Yeah, Madam Co-Chair, I move Senate Bill 1566A to the House floor with a due pass recommendation.
Thank you, Co-Chair Olson. Co-Chair Olson moves Senate Bill 1566A to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Discussion. Representative Wingert.
Madam Chair, colleagues, sadly, I'm going to be a no vote on this bill today. Just as a reminder, we have, over the last couple of sessions, been working very hard in the education committees to try to identify educational mandates to repeal. And we did about 30 of them in the last session. And just last week, we brought you a bill on the House floor to eliminate 8 more. Mandates that are basically like this one, that just pile up. Each one of them by itself is oftentimes not a huge cost, but they pile up on top of each other, and they lead to that bureaucracy that so many, or high administration costs that so many of our taxpayers complain to us about. And I just, after that work and the educational groups working so hard to try to identify mandates, and it's a very difficult negotiation and process to get there, to, in the, you know, the next week, to be putting another mandate on public schools, I just think is the wrong direction, and it's the wrong message. And with apologies, I must be consistent and be a no on this bill.
Thank you, Representative. Representative Barnhart?
Thank you. I'll pass.
Representative Berger?
Yes. I appreciate the difficulty of education mandates. I, however, have a slightly different take on this bill in that I have 4 grandchildren in a school in another county, and I can't wait for this website to see what the seismic issues around that school are. I think this would be very useful information to me and my family, so I will be supportive of this bill.
Thank you, Representative. Representative Holvey.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just a comment, too. I'm fully supporting this bill. I think it's a good idea. Notwithstanding the minor mandate that may come in, I think this is a tool the state needs, that our school districts need, to help identify the next construction project that's going to produce jobs. So thank you very much.
Thank you, Representative. Further discussion on Senate Bill 1566? Seeing none, Amy, would you call the roll, please?
Representative Barnhart? Aye.
Aye.
Representative Escobar?
Aye.
Representative Freeman?
Nope.
Representative Garrett?
Aye.
Representative Winger?
No.
Co-Vice Chair Berger?
Aye.
Co-Chair Kotek?
Aye.
Co-Chair Olson?
Aye.
1566A, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. Representative Berger, would you like to carry?
I would be honored.
Thank you very much. We'll close the work session on Senate Bill 1566 and open a work session on SJM 201A.
Madam Chair.
Mr. Co-Chair.
I move the SJM 201A be moved to the House floor with a due adopt.
Thank you, Co-Chair Olson. Co-Chair Olson moves SJM 201A to the floor with a due adopt recommendation. Discussion. Representative Holvey, and then Representative Barnett.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just wanted to voice my support for this bill and support for the Congressman in bringing this act forward. I think it has long been overdue that we address our logs and our jobs going overseas, and this act has a piece that does that. And I'm really excited about the aspects of that because we need that value-added product made here in Oregon. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative. Representative Barnhart?
Pass. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Further discussion on the SJM? Colleagues, I do not want to hold up the process on this. I have the utmost respect for Senator Girard and the other co-sponsors on the Senate Joint Memorial. I will say that I still have reservations about the broadness of the resolved paragraph, and as such, I think I'll be voting no on this, but I have no desire to hold this up. I think the general intent is a good one. I think it's just a matter of wanting to focus on one thing as opposed to the other thing. So just wanted to say that for the record. Further discussion? Seeing none, Amy, could you call the roll, please?
Representative Barnhart?
Aye.
Representative Byer?
Aye.
Representative Esquivel?
Aye.
Representative Freeman?
Yes.
Representative Garrett?
Aye.
Representative Winger?
Aye.
Co-Vice Chair Berger?
Aye.
Co-Vice Chair Holby?
Aye.
Co-Chair Olson?
Aye.
Co-Chair
Kopeck? No. Senate Joint Memorial 201A, having received the constitutional majority, is passed. It's going to the floor with a do-adopt recommendation. And do I have a carrier? Representative Freeman, would you like to carry?
Please.
Thank you very much. Thank you, colleagues. Close the work session on SJM 201.
Why don't you arm wrestle here?
We're going to open a work session on Senate Bill 1509B. Chair, we have not had any discussion. We're going to get a summary. Thank you.
Chairs and members of the committee, Senate Bill 1509B permits dentists and dental hygienists licensed in good standing in another state upon application with the Board of Dentistry at least 10 days in advance to provide charitable care for up to 5 consecutive days in any 12-month period. There is a dash B-20 amendment which conforms, as my understanding, to possible changes in federal law if the federal law changes come into effect. There's also a received today and not yet summarized B-24 amendment, which the committee may consider. And if you'd like the additional background, I'm happy.
No, I think we'll wait. So, colleagues, you should have a dash 20 amendment in your stack. That is the amendment we will hopefully be considering moving 1509. So if you could locate that. There is also a dash 24. We're just going to focus on the dash 20s. But I would like to, if there anyone who would like to speak to the base bill? George, would you like to do that?
This is the part everybody cares about.
You have Lori Freeman here, I mean, if you want to bring some clarification.
Chair Kotek, Chair Olson, members of the committee, for the record, my name is George Okuvich, here on behalf of the Oregon Dental Association, here in support of the Senate Bill 1509, the original bill. I don't have any comment on the amendments. This bill, I'm passing out right now a copy of sort of our January membership matters document. I apologize for the thickness of it, but I think it illustrates really what the problem is we're trying to solve in 1509. Each year, the Oregon Dental Association hosts a Mission of Mercy project where we offer free dental care to really anybody who shows up. And it's commonly held at the Portland Convention Center. I think on page 15 it does a summary. You know, we did over $1 million of free dental care, saw over 2,000 patients. I think Chair Kotek, Representative Winger, and Hoover actually came and visited the event. So the reason for this bill is we're actually doing the Mission of Mercy project in 2012 in Medford. And so we already have excitement sort of from our Douglas, Jackson, Curry, Josephine Dental Societies who are excited about participating in this event and putting it on. We ran into one little issue last year when the Board of Dentistry said out-of-state dentists and out-of-state hygienists who wanted to participate and volunteer couldn't do so. And we thought the Board of Dentistry could do it, and it's a reason kind of it's coming to you late is there was some misinterpretation from the AG, and eventually we were found out that we had to get statutory change. And so that's what the bill does. It's particularly important down in Medford when we don't have as many dentists and hygienists to draw from in those surrounding areas. We already have a lot of folks from California interested in participating. And so I would ask your support of the 1509 amendment.
Thank you, George. And as he mentioned, I attended the Mission Mercy in Portland. I think Representative Winger did as well. I urge folks who can to visit the project in Medford when it happens later in the year. It's truly phenomenal. Again, it provides some needed dental care to folks who really need it. It's a pretty amazing infrastructure of how they do this, and so I hope folks can visit. And this is just one thing that would be very helpful to make sure that annual event can succeed. And so I would hope that you could support the base bill. Other discussion about the base bill before we move on to the amendments?
Madam Chair.
Yes, Representative.
I would just add that, having visited, what you do is spectacular. And it's clear when you show up, as I did, and watch people go through the process, how much it really means to them to have that opportunity. Clearly indigent people who otherwise would not get those dental services. And, you know, thanks for inviting me, and I hope it continues.
Thank you, Representative. Thank you, George. So we're going to move on to some discussion around the Dash B-20 amendment. We have Lori Freeman from Legislative Council with us. Colleagues, as in any other session, as we move forward to conclusion, there's always things that get caught that need to be fixed or clarified. As you know, this morning on the floor, we passed Senate Bill 1580, the transformation bill, and this would clarify an aspect of that. Representative Freeman, did you want to say anything about this?
Would. Thank you, Madam Chair. And Lori, thank you for being here, and thank you for this year-long journey learning about health care delivery, and more importantly, the small amount that I've learned about health care law that I know you're an expert in. Colleagues, what we have today is some language that is the federal law, not the regulation that was I use the right words, Lori can better describe this, cleaned up and tried to made to read better in the bill that we passed. I've been told by Legislative Council that this doesn't fundamentally change procedurally how things will work, and I'll let her speak to that, but it does now match the federal law, which gave some of the people that are out there working on CCOs a little more comfort in not having two different sets of words that mean the same thing. We're going to go to one set of words that is the federal law, and you may remember the federal government is our majority partner in this Medicaid system, so it's important that we do things that they approve of. So with that, I do have a question I'm going to ask, but could you explain a little bit about your interpretation, if this changes anything or makes it more
yes.
clear, less clear, or you're okay with it?
Co-chairs Kotek and Olson and Representative Freeman, Lori Freeman from the Office of Legislative Counsel. The new language, just as you said, it mirrors the language that's in the Patient Protection and Affordable Care Act, with the difference being that the Affordable Care Act, it applies only to insurance companies, and this extends it to MCOs and CCOs. There is no substantive difference, however, between the language in the Dash B-20 amendments and the language that was in Section 8 of Senate Bill 1580A. They are constructed differently, but in the end, they get to the same result.
And then, Madam Chair, with your indulgence,
yes.
There is
Representative.
At least one stakeholder that had a specific question I'd like to ask since he's in the room. So this proposed amendment, will it in any different way ensure different provider types, non-MD providers, providing the same services will not be discriminated against as per the baseline reimbursement for that service, but then maybe paid more than this baseline fee from superior quality of performance? So my question is, does this change any of that contractual arrangement that could go on?
Co-chairs Kotek and Olson, Representative Freeman, The language we had in Senate Bill 1580A specifically said you couldn't discriminate based on reimbursement, but then it went on in subsection 2 to say that you could discriminate based upon quality measures, and you could use different reimbursement amounts for different specialties. This language doesn't, at the outset, say you can't discriminate in reimbursement, but in the last sentence of subsection 1, it says, does not prevent a plan or organization from establishing varying reimbursement rates based on quality or performance measures. Therefore, the implication there is that's what you can vary on, is based on quality or performance measures.
So one quick question.
So
let me recap in words that maybe I understand a little better. I'm sorry, you and I do this back and forth all the time. So what you're saying is they both say the same thing, they just say it with different words.
Co-chairs Kotek and Olson, Representative Freeman, that's correct.
Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Freeman. Representative Berger.
Yes, so I can understand the purpose of the B-20 is that in 1580 there was language that said this, but it didn't say it right, and is that why we have these amendments? I'm confused as to the purpose of these amendments. You want to? Yeah.
I'm happy to answer that. Throughout the process of developing the bill and talking to stakeholders, Representative Kotek, myself, and others had always said we were doing what the federal law said around this issue.
Mm-hmm.
But we said it over and over and over. Lori Freeman, who wrote the bill for us, assured us that's what it does, and we believe her. There is certain stakeholder groups that think it doesn't. It is simply getting the wording to match the federal law. So there's no legal challenge, there's no attorney fighting. It just simply gets us to the same exact words. I happen to agree with Lori that it reads better the way she wrote it. This just happens to be the way the feds wrote it.
Okay, are those stakeholders that are doubters comfortable with this language?
The ones that thought there was a difference want the federal language mirrored.
They want this.
That's what it does, absolutely.
Okay, I would like to hear who those folks are, or that they nod, or something. That I mean, I am walking into a conversation.
Well, and what I would say about this is I concur with Representative Freeman on, as we work through 1580, you know, we really want to clarify the federal role around non-discrimination in providers. We thought it was very critical, and we also thought it was important, as you saw in the bill, which I think just mirrors what was in 1580, is the appeals process. Because otherwise, the appeals process wasn't going to be as effective enough to back that up. But we were trying to get the alignment with the federal language correct. I do think the piece around reimbursement is an important piece to clarify. The way I read this, as I agree with everyone here, is that if you're going to have a difference in reimbursement rates, it must be set on quality or performance measures, not some other random rationale. And I think that's important.
Was that, Madam Chair, was mm-hmm. that language not in the original? I'm sorry I didn't bring my bill file.
It was in the original, but this was structured differently in 1580, if I recall. So if you go back to 1580, it might not be obvious, but yes, the overall intent is the same. It's just structured differently. Frankly, it was the difficulty we were having of taking federal Medicaid law and, you know, making it fit the style of LC for Senate Bill 1580. But in the interest of transparency, I don't know if there's anyone who wanted to speak to this. We're trying to clarify on the record. We've gotten the sense that if we clarified the things we've talked about, there is comfort level. I see a lot of healthcare people in the room, but no one's jumping out of their seats.
Are we moving this?
We would like to move the Dash 20 today with 1509 to move it to the floor.
Are we going to have discussion of 24?
We were only going to have discussion on the 20s. 24 is premature and not ready for prime time. So did I have questions on the 20s? I know you do have the 24s in front of you, but that's, again, we're not planning to move those. They did not come out the way we needed them to come out. So, Representative Barnhart.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I understood that one of the issues that this bill needed to deal with had to do with nonprofits acting as CCOs. Has that been resolved?
That is the addition. So the Dash 24 is the Dash 20
with an attempt with additional language to clarify, as we said on the floor today, into the record, that nothing in 1580 was to preclude nonprofits from being coordinated care organizations. We have learned at the 11th hour we need clarification of that. We're trying to figure out how to do that. We're not going to try to do that today in this vehicle. That's why we're just talking about the dash 20s.
So if I could, that could potentially be done in a conference committee if necessary.
Yes,
there are other ways. We just trying to move things along, and right, as opposed to holding till we get that language just right. We might need another day or two.
Makes sense to me, given how close we are to the end of things. Thank you, Madam Chair. Mm-hmm.
Thank you, Representative. So we have the base bill, 1509B. We have the dash 20s. Representative Freeman?
Are we in a work session?
We are in a work session, Representative.
Madam Chair, I would move the dash B20s into House Bill 1509.
Representative Freeman moves amendments dash B20 dated February 21st to Senate Bill 1509. Discussion on the motion to adopt dash 20s. Representative Berger.
Yes, thank you very much. I won't belabor the point that we passed this out of the House floor this afternoon, actually, and we are now engaged in our first amendment of this concept. Which I will support, by the way, if I understand exactly what it does. I would caution us that we don't have a whole lot of bills that are related to health, so we might be shooting our only bullet, and I don't know how many amendments we're contemplating between now and the end of session. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative. Representative Winger.
I just want to say that Representative Freeman told us on the House floor today that the bill was evolving, and it clearly still is.
It is still evolving.
Thank you, Representative. Other comments about the motion to adopt the dash 20s?
Mutating, right?
Any further discussion on the dash 20s? Seeing none, any objection to adopting the dash 20s? Seeing none, so ordered. Entertain a motion for the rest of this. Representative Freeman?
Madam Chair, I move Senate Bill 1509 as amended to the House floor with a do pass recommendation.
Thank you, Representative Freeman. Representative Freeman moves Senate Bill 1509B as amended to the floor with a do pass recommendation. Discussion, colleagues? Seeing none. Amy, would you call the roll, please?
Representative Barnhart?
Aye.
Representative Byer?
Aye.
Representative Escobar?
Aye.
Representative Freeman?
Yes.
Representative Garrett?
Aye.
Representative Winger?
Aye.
Co-Vice Chair Burke?
Aye.
Co-Vice Chair Bolton?
Aye.
Aye. Senate Bill 1509B, as amended, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. Anita Carrier?
Not me.
Representative Wingard, it'd be great if you could talk about Mission Mercy on the floor. That'd be great. Representative Wingard will carry. With that, we'll close the work session on Senate Bill 1509. Again, we're carrying over House Bill 4176 till tomorrow morning. Do we have a time yet? If everyone could wait, we're going to talk calendars real quickly. And
what's 9 o'clock look like for everybody?
Is there anything? Is there anything else that we need to carry over? We're fine. Just 4176. All right.
What about 8 then?
With that, we're adjourned. Thank you.
What time?